yesterday with the facilities division and Bill Foster, if you could maybe come back and we'll continue that. And I can't give admonishment to the members of the committee here about moving things along today since they're not present. But
you can give praise to those who are.
Yes, we'll certainly do that.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, member of the committee.
I don't think we can take any official action today.
No, but we can take this ugly testimony.
Yeah.
My name is Bill Foster. I'm the acting administrator of the Facilities Division. And I believe we left off on page 21 of the presentation, which is the first program area, the real property services. And one of the functions of that group is dealing with leases, both in our own buildings and in private leases. And we have a lease about 4 million square feet. We own about 3.2. We also have two FTE that are dealing with some of the real property transactions and surplus property. The operations and maintenance program is the largest piece of our budget and the largest number of staff. We have three types of agreements that are used for assigning leases or rental under that program. One is the uniform rent program, another is a self-support program, and the third is service agreements. And we basically are either pooling the costs for that program under uniform rent or doing it on an individual building basis. The project management have 14 staff that work on the various construction projects that the department has. Seven are project managers. Senator, we're on page 23.
Okay, good. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Seven are project managers. We have two architectural space planners, a computer-aided drafting person, and a manager and three support staff. Our parking program is run by six staff. We handle about 4,500 spaces in Salem, Eugene, and Portland. We also have some contracts and arrangements with the public transit to cover some of the bus passes and that kind of thing. Statewide services is another program. There's five staff. And that includes the state architect, statewide facilities coordinator, facilities engineer, statewide resource coordinator, and support staff. And this is a program that not only looks at what is going on within our division, but tries to coordinate and maintain an inventory and some information about capital projects and capital assets on a statewide basis. And
is this what staffs the Capital Project Advisory Board?
Yes. The last is the facilities administration that simply consists of the administrator of the division and some support staff. Moving on to performance measures, on page 29, the division has a number of diverse programs and services, and one of the major pieces of our programs that kind of crosses many lines is the uniform rent program. And so as kind of an indicator, we usually look at the uniform rent rate against the private market. And so that is our key performance measure. It Right now, the economy's been a little weak, so our rate has been getting closer to market. But I just saw a report, a preliminary report in the paper a couple days ago, that was indicating that rates have been jumping a little bit. The second is our customer survey, and here we were trying to look at the level of service and whether we usually or always were seen as delivering good service, and we're trying to benchmark at least 80%. And we in 03 had been at 81.5, and at least again the preliminary results from the survey that's beginning to come in right now would suggest that we should be at least there. The last one is really kind of a measure that we inherited with the suspension of the Capital Planning Commission, and I can't say that it's a whole lot of value. The other piece that
was the last performance measure.
Page 31.
What do you mean it's not of? I don't understand what you're saying.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morsette, it just simply was talking about the percentage of projects where we engaged in some kind of public process. Well, we're really required to do that, and you know, we did it on all of them. So to have a measure is sort of
something
inconsequential.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. The other piece of our particular budget in the facilities division is the capital improvement and construction. And having an inventory of a number of buildings, there are needs to either make improvements or component replacements of pieces of our buildings or construct new. And that are part of the budget each biennium. And the division is between capital improvement is a financial one. The projects that are under $500,000, $500,000 or under, are considered capital improvement, although they're broken out, they're a single line item in the operating budget. The capital construction are those that are over $500,000, are in another part, are individual line items, and are also reviewed by a separate subcommittee of Ways and Means later in the session.
May I add on to that, Bill? In the past, the practice has been for each subcommittee to review any capital construction proposed in by specific agencies. And then, as Mr. Foster said, the capital construction projects are actually included in a separate bill. What we do is make note of the recommendation of each of the subcommittees and carry it forward into whatever subcommittee is hearing the whole capital construction bill, so it doesn't necessarily have to review all of the projects once again, that they are reviewed many of them are reviewed in individual subs. So I just wanted to explain that to the committee. Maybe it, during the phase two, be reviewing them and making recommendations into a subsequent subcommittee on this.
Thank you.
The prioritized list, I think the nature of the programs within the facilities division are highly interrelated and mutually dependent. And to support the services, some aspects of all programs are really necessary, but we've tried to at least make some sense out of this request and put them in what is maybe an order that reflects the biggest impact and what are maybe more core functions than less core functions. And so that's the listing that you see reflected there. As far as the House Bill 3182, 10% reductions, we have several items that were included to meet that requirement. The first was simply a services and supply reduction that would reduce the response time and the quality, in a sense, of the maintenance contract on some of our equipment. The second is reducing the park and ride shuttle service for the parking program. And this would impact potentially a number of the Capital Mall users and potentially increases congestion in the mall area. The next is...
I'm sorry, may I ask you, could you tell me a little bit more about the park and ride shuttle service? I'm not really familiar with that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morsett, what we have is a lot that's out on Airport Road adjacent to the motor pool.
Okay, that far away.
Yes, and a number of people park there, and then they ride the buses, the city buses, into the mall area.
That is a very large amount of money for that. Are you going to eliminate the program? Is that what you're talking about, or
Mr. Chair, Senator Morsett, no, that's cutting it back. It actually is a higher amount that we contribute toward that. I'd have to confirm the exact number. I believe it's somewhere in the order of magnitude of $800,000. It's basically the equivalent of paying for a bus. You know, the operating costs associated with a bus within the transit district.
One bus,
right?
For
driver, you know, all the operations maintenance for the biennium.
One bus,
right?
$800,000, $400,000 a year.
I need to confirm, but that's my understanding, Mr. Chair.
Just intuitively, that seems a little high.
May I follow?
Go ahead.
I'm interested in the consequences of doing that. I mean, you're going to have people then driving and trying to find parking spots near the Capitol, and that's going to be an interesting scenario. And I do walk from the Lee Apartments, and I watch people get into all of these parking spots. Of course, there is a very large underground parking area. And have you analyzed whether or not there's room in the area? Is there something that people can take comfort in?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morsett, we are near the capacity of the parking that we have. In fact, there are some management things that could be done to get a little more out of it, such as having fewer reserve spaces and allowing more people to hunt for a space on an available basis, which means that you can accommodate a few more. But we're fairly maxed out on it. Now, there are some other private lots around, but potentially this does create other problems of incursions into neighborhoods and other kinds of things.
Do you run two shifts, Bill, with this bus? Just looking at the cost per hour, this is a minutia, but it just seems like we're tilted a little bit on the high side.
Mr.
of the
Chairman, I you're getting beyond detail that I have with me.
And I don't expect you to have that kind of memory at hand, but based on my experience, convert that to cost per hour seems a little high.
Thank you. And again, I may be getting too detailed for this morning. The 1650 Capital Mall users, does that represent a per biennium number as well, or and do you know if there's information exists as to the frequency of the use? I guess I'm going to ask a more simple. Do you know how many people per day use this?
Mr. Chairman, service? Representative Avakian, we keep statistics. I don't have them with me, but we certainly can provide.
Seems
that
this
is.
It's such a big number, 800,000, that it would. If you're going to request information, it would be nice to know how many people are really taking advantage of the bus as it's being used.
I think we could maybe mark that for additional pursuit in as we go on to phase two.
Thank you. The next was a position that helps support the drawings and the records that we keep on buildings, and eliminating that position would reduce the efficiency and effectiveness of our project management and maintenance staff. The next position is within the statewide program and is being used to help analyze some of the energy use and systems in our building, and eliminating that position would mean that we would have to rely more heavily on consultant services for some of that analysis rather than having a staff member do it.
That's an interesting point, because are we going to really save money by going to a consultant? I imagine the assumption is, yes, we would save money, but would we really?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morissette, it's hard to say. If we did as much analysis as we're attempting to do now, we very well may not be saving money. You know, this is a list of potential reductions that... But the nature of our particular program and the fees that we are, and user fees that we're based upon, means that it's indirect. There isn't direct savings in many cases.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, actually members of the committee, just as a reference again, these were the list of reductions that DAS prepared because of the statutory requirement, and then again at the co-chair's request. A lot of them don't necessarily make sense if you look at the impact either to other agencies or the possible reduction in services or costs on an outside matter. And I think that Director Warner actually will have some additional discussion about the interaction between those proposed cuts and what DAS is doing in some of the reengineering efforts, et cetera, if we get there at the end of the meeting. So just keep that for sort of context if you see
Good.
Both this list and the IRND list today.
Thank you.
And the final two, we have one that is a half-time position that assists the leasing agents in keeping their files and records, and this, again, would somewhat compromise their effectiveness and efficiency and the quality control on leases. The final one is a reduction in some services and supplies for operations and maintenance related to buildings and landscapes, and potentially could erode the appearance of the buildings and landscapes.
Any questions? Bill, could you speak briefly to the maintenance function, and have you looked at contracting out that maintenance function and what that savings might be?
Mr. Chair, you know, we try to continuously look at what we're doing, and within our whole program, there's a numbers of things that are contracted for continuously, and it's a mix. And we try to be using our own staff for things that are cost-effective and using contracts where that's more cost-effective. Certain kinds of things, working with certain kinds of chillers that, you know, provide the cooling for a building, take a certain amount of expertise that we may not have in-house, and we don't need to use them enough that it makes sense to do that, so we hire that. And so that's a more cost-effective way of doing it. On the other hand, I think generally a lot of things, the way some of the scale is and all, we end up being able to provide the services for no more, if not less, than private contractors.
Well, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Fleming, welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Tom Fleming, state CIO. I work for Lori Warner, acting director of Department of Administrative Services.
Please proceed.
See? Okay. Go to page 5. I want to talk to you today about the Information Resource Management Division. To understand this division, I think it's useful to think of it as consisting of three pieces. There is a major operations piece, services, running phones, phone systems, running networks. A lot of the network traffic is managed in this organization, publishing and distribution, mail services and so forth. So there's a very substantial amount of the division, and its resources are allocated to providing services not just to DAS but to the entire state. There's a second element to the division, which is the governance and oversight area. And in that area, the division is responsible for example, providing the quality assurance and oversight of major strategic IT investments. A good example of that would be PERS or the Medicaid Management Information System, replacement system in DHS. These investments are like $65, $70, $75 million. So these are enormous IT investments that, and the purpose of this oversight activity is to try to assist the agencies in being successfully implementing these systems to achieve their requirements. Part of this area is to develop a strategic information technology plan for the state. I spent a fair amount of time briefing the JLCIMT, and one of the pieces of information that they need is the strategic information technology plan so that they can see how these major investments get identified and justified and what's the framework within which they're being brought to them, and how do we know that these investments should be made at the agency level as opposed to at the state level. And then finally, there's this area called enterprise programs, and these programs really fall into two buckets. And I'll give you an example. One of the areas in which we're pursuing enterprise programs is what I'm calling attack the base, or try to get at reducing the operating costs of providing information technology services to the state. An example of that would be the data center network consolidation project. Its primary objective is to provide those services to the state at a much lower cost while maintaining or improving the service level. So it's really not designed to produce a whole new set of capabilities for the state, but to produce an existing set of capabilities much more efficiently than the current approach. And that program, as you know, is in progress. It'll be coming back and reporting in the March-April timeframe. Specifically what the business case will be and the amount of savings that we're going to commit to being able to deliver through that program. An example of another kind of enterprise program would be the eGov program. Now, the eGov program is designed to provide the state with a new set of capabilities beyond its current capabilities. And one of its primary objectives is to try to make available to the citizens of the state all of the services that the state provides via the Internet so that people don't have to stand in lines in office buildings. They don't have to understand how the state is organized to deliver services to the citizens, that they can conveniently and electronically access state services like they can from every other organization in the private sector and in some cases public sector that provides services. So it is a way for us to improve the cost effectiveness of the service, and people in our agency staffs can be used to deal with problems and service issues where people are required, and much of what we do today with people can be handled through a self-service, well-designed Information Technology Solution, the eGov program. So that's an example of a program that provides the state with new services, moves it into the 21st century in terms of making those services more convenient and acceptable. And so those are the three pieces that make up the Information Resource Management Division. If you go to page 6, just a little bit of history. I'll try to go through this fairly quickly. Since I'm new, this all happened long before I got here. But in 1993, early 90s, IRMD, at that time, basically, if you'll excuse the acronym, if that bothers people, I can avoid using it. It consisted of data networking, which it still does, runs of telephone services, which it still does, and central computing, which it does today through something called the General Government Data Center, the GGDC. Systems development, which it still provides, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And in 1997, other programs were merged. The Oregon Education Network was merged with it in 97. And going to page 7, also in 97, a GIS or Geographic Information Systems program was moved into IRMD. This is obviously a very information technology intensive kind of a program, but it's also a good example of an enterprise program that provides new and important capabilities to the state. This is a program that touches all levels of government within the state.
Excuse me.
Yes, yeah. Officer.
Thank you. Department of Emergency Management has their information and the Geology Department on your website. I'm talking about the tsunami warning systems that appear on websites that show the inundation zones along the coast. I don't know if they're on. Do you know if they're on your website?
Senator Morissette. Well, I don't know for sure, but what I would guess is that it's probably available through the portal, the state portal, as information that's public information about the tsunami warning system.
I'm just talking about emergency management. That's yes, in your division. I'm sorry, not your division, but that's a state division.
Okay. Senator Morissette. Emergency management is not a responsibility that is in the Department of Administrative Services, okay, nor is it something that IRMD is directly responsible for. Okay. However, we do provide support. I will be talking about an initiative a little bit later on called Business Continuity Planning, which we closely work with Office of Emergency Management in that area.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
On page 7, as I was just beginning to discuss, the Geographic Information Systems program is a very compute information technology intensive program, and it deals with all levels of government. It deals with the city level, the county level, the state agency level, the federal level. From the point of view of being able to construct an enterprise program where everything is coordinated and moves as if it's a single system, this is far more daunting as a business model, ownership, management issue than it is a technology issue. But the importance of this program and its relevance to emergency management, being able to get the fire engines to the right place and knowing if there's a forest fire, if property and life are threatened by this and things like that. This is a very important program to the state. There's also a considerable amount of federal funding that's available if the state is able to produce a solid strategy. Going on, this is my little history thing here. In 1999-2001 timeframe, the state made a major effort to develop an enterprise network for the state of Oregon under the acronym SOEN and a negotiated contract, which today we work under with Quest, that produces much of our network services. In 2001, the eGov program that I referred to earlier was formed, just very quickly, went through what I would call a proof of concept and stage. And about the time I joined the state of Oregon, which was in August of 2003, seems like, August of 2003, when we looked at the eGov program, we felt that the program was very solid from a technology point of view, but was not ready for implementation. It did not have an adequate training program, a program to support the conversion of web content and so forth. So we went through a major phase then to put into place a transition phase for the program so it could actually go into production. I'll talk about it in a little bit more detail now, but we're quite dependent on the program. Publishing and distribution. It's a major business. Obviously, it's becoming more and more computer-dependent, and because of the dominant dependence on the technology and so forth, it was merged into IRMD in the summer of 2002. And then in the spring of 2003, an enterprise security office was created, and we'll talk a little bit more about that and how that ties into the data center network consolidation project. But it really gets at risk exposure for the state. That's what it's all about. It's trying to make sure that we know factually what our risk exposure is and that we have programs in place to put that risk exposure at a level that is acceptable to us as an enterprise. And there's a lot of technology and so forth involved, and I'll talk about that a little bit later on. Okay, moving on to page 11. The mission statement sort of also breaks down into these pieces. The first one, sentence, is to provide leadership within state government for the effective development, management, and enhancement of digital technologies, really to ensure that the state is leveraging information technology in the most cost-effective way, and that gets at some of our oversight and governance role. And then to provide core technology and communication services in support of state agency, that gets at the service side of the mission. Sometimes these things can get in each other's way. I mean, if you're providing oversight in the same area you're providing services, the objectivity of the oversight can sometimes be an issue. But anyway, so that sort of reflects what I've been through before in terms of the way to look at the organization. Yes, sir.
Could you address the span of control of your office with respect to other major agencies that are, you know, within your kind of purview of assistance, specifically to the point of if there are issues that need addressing and changed, can you actually implement those?
Yes, sir. Chairman Morris, members of the committee, through the oversight function and the statutory basis for it, we are required to oversee investments and how those investments are managed. And we have, in instances, intervened. I think PERS would be an example. Intervened and taken action there to try to help the agency get a program back on track. I would say that the primary relationship that we've had with the agencies, which I think has been very successful for us, has been a collaborative relationship. We're through Chief Information Officer Council. What we do is we try to formulate our enterprise strategies through that organization. So if we want to think about IRMD, the sort of the shift in the model is that we view IRMD more as a spark plug than as an organization that goes off into some closet and develops all these strategies and then turns around and imposes them on the rest of the state. We don't feel that we have the knowledge and expertise to understand something as large and complex as the state of Oregon without getting the folks who are experts within the agencies involved in this process. So sort of where I come in is I insist on the process taking place, but the process is collaborative. And we go through this process of coming up with what are the things we should do at the enterprise level, what are the things that we should do at the agency level, what are the standards that we're going to set and enforce. And this I think has worked very well, and it has not been an adversarial relationship. I think it's turned into a very effective collaborative relationship. And much of the statute that I've read, that you all have written, always has the word collaborative written in it someplace. And I think that one of the things we've been able to do in the last 18 months is to establish a much better and more positive working relationship with the agencies in terms of trying to get some of these programs off the ground. I think you know about, in the area of cybersecurity, I think 12, 18 months ago, not many people would have given us much of a chance to be able to do vulnerability assessments in 12 of our largest agencies and have them cooperate with that process, and then 12 of those agency directors sign a letter, okay, to the legislature approving and recommending a cybersecurity plan at the enterprise level to deal with these vulnerabilities. That's a pretty long answer for your question, but
thank you.
Yeah. All right, moving on page 12, in terms of, again, these pieces that I've been talking about, operations, to improve customer satisfaction, total cost of service delivery and program effectiveness, and I think an important element of this statement is the metrics part of it. The idea being to manage by fact, not by anecdote or feeling or opinion as much as possible. And one of the things that we've tried to do within IRMD, and it's in process, it's not a completed thing, is to say for each major service that we provide, we have to have three customer-facing metrics. One that talks about how efficient that service is. Number two, one that talks about the quality of that service. Is that service provided well, high-quality service? And number three, is that service relevant or of value to our customers, and that being measured by a customer satisfaction type of metric. And we're in the process of putting these metrics in place. We're better in some areas than in other areas, but we're trying to get off this situation where we don't really have any objective quantitative basis for being able to tell if we're doing well. And so these metrics not only tell us where we are, but we line them up with benchmark data so we can compare our performance to other people, what other organizations have been able to do, and ask the question, why can't we do as well as they're doing? How come we do this twice as slowly as somebody else? Is there something about our organization, something about our processes? Can we improve that performance? And if you're going to have a continuous improvement program, you have to have a metrics program to support it. So in the operations area, yeah, we're running a bunch of services, and we do a pretty good job at it, but we're trying to put into place an effective metrics program so we can manage them better and more cost-effectively. In the governance and oversight area, a major area is overseeing and restructuring the way in which we look at the investments, particularly in the asset management. I've talked about quality assurance, and I've used PERS and MMIS as examples. I will readily admit to you that the quality assurance area takes a considerable amount of resource, and at this point in time, we're focused on the very largest and most significant investments. And that we need to look at those investments from their conceptualization all the way through their implementation in order to ensure that these things are managed well and successfully. The governance, the new processes that we're talking about, is to really say that if I were to try to resource the quality assurance program, I would have to ask my management to approve hiring a couple of dozen experts to help us oversee these projects. Now, she wouldn't approve that, and the agencies probably wouldn't accept the assessment for that. So in order to have an effective and affordable quality assurance program, and I talked to JLCIMT about this, we're going to engage experts in the agencies as part of the quality assurance program to oversee all aspects of our major strategic investments. Okay, another program that you've heard of is an acronym, CNIC. It stands for the Computing and Networking Infrastructure Consolidation Program. And its goal is, and we've said it before, and it says to reduce costs. I think I would add the word to substantially reduce costs, or else you wouldn't want to fool with it. To substantially reduce costs while maintaining or improving the service levels. And I think, as Representative Hunt said in the JLCIMT, one of the things about shared services strategies that I think are very appealing is that if, in fact, there's a business case for pursuing them, they, on the one hand, produce a significant cost reduction, and on the other hand, they do not tear the service down. They do not cause it. And the way they do that, or why they do that, is because you don't cut within the current business model. You change the model. So you put together those things that scale up and become more efficient when they're centralized, and you don't put together the stuff that doesn't scale up. And you put it under a governance organization that's run by the people that you expect to depend on it, which is a good way to sustain an organization that's responsive to the organizations that it's supposed to serve. EGOV, we talked a little bit about EGOV, and EGOV is different from CNIC. EGOV, I think, is something, we talk a lot about CNIC, but EGOV is really important, I think, and maybe doesn't get the exposure that it really deserves, because it really is giving us new capabilities. It's really moving us into the 21st century. What CNIC is doing is saving us money. It's allowing us to do something we already do an awful lot more cost effectively, and it's really inexcusable not to do that. I mean, it just makes sense to spend a lot more money to get the same thing if you can do it better and more cost effective. So that's what CNIC is about. It's a shared services strategy, and shared services are something that we all ought to be looking at as ways to go after our base costs. And generally, a lot of organizations, as they move into shared services, they start with something like a data center network consolidation program. The GIS program has tremendous potential to the state in terms of emergency preparedness and response, effective use of resources, natural resources, but it requires an incredible amount of coordination and governance spanning all levels of government. Yes.
Well, I was just going to ask when it's appropriate.
Go ahead.
Is that all right? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back on the e-government section, as you're putting the technical components together, as part of your team, do you have folks who are handling the marketing end of it to make sure that it's user-friendly, that it's understood at the eighth grade level, that that even I could figure out how to get through the e-government portions of what's available to the public?
Chairman Morris and Representative Smith, that's really a very good question. Let me see if I can answer this very simply. There is a technical ownership over the e-gov program, and I've got that. There is an ownership about content and how it looks, and that's handled through the communications office in the agency, reports to the director. One of the problems we've had in the past is the introduction of this program to non-technical people and the education of those people so that they're not intimidated by the program. See, one of the things that's really unique about the program is it turns out that if you want to publish web content, put content out there on the internet, you don't have to know a thing about a computer. If you can read and type, you can put content out there, and that's the beauty of it. Before this program, you had to get somebody to go write you a program, okay, in something called HTML. Okay, and every time you needed to change that page, you had to go get that programmer and have that programmer change that thing. So that was a very kind of technical thing, and you couldn't just unilaterally publish content. But if you know what you want to say and how you want to say it, you yourself can directly interact with the platform. Now, have we done the world's best job of explaining that and training people on that? No, we haven't. And what we're trying to do now is to move into a different kind of a management model where we put a lot more emphasis on our customer, on training our customer, helping our customer, showing the customer the opportunities to exploit this investment so that we can really get the bang out of this thing that it's really worth. And we get different kinds of folks running and managing programs. So the kind of person you want to figure out what the technology is, test it all out, make sure it's bulletproof and it's secure, okay? Jim Hill did a really great job on that, okay? And what we're doing now is we're transitioning to a different kind of a management team that's going to be much more effective at addressing the kinds of issues you raise, because they're really important issues. There's no reason why non-technical people can't understand and use this platform and exploit it. And so we need to make it simple. It's not this big mystery thing that can't be done by people.
My follow up. My eighth grade son is available as a consultant for hire, because that's that's the route I take. If my eighth grader can understand it, then it's released. So.
Chairman Morse, Representative Smith, actually, that's a much higher standard than we're looking for. Turns out these eighth graders are pretty darn sharp.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, so we're going to try to pitch it at the level that you and I can.
Okay.
I'm just going to make a comment, Mr. Chair, about the eighth grade level. In campaign schools, they teach us that most adults think mentally at the eighth grade level. Speak that way, think that way. The average guy out there working, making a buck.
Yeah.
And it is important, and we sort of joke about it, but it really is important that this is user-friendly so that the average person with an eighth grade education can go online and function equitably within the system. And I would again encourage you to look very, very seriously at maintaining that simplicity. There's a reason that the Army uses the axiom KISS.
Yeah, keep it simple.
And it really is important here especially. Thank you.
Chairman Morse, Representative Kraft, just to follow up on that statement. If you look at what most of the money and most of the technology investments that have been made in personal computers over the last 5 years, it's not been to increase so much the capabilities of the box as it has been to increase its user friendliness. So it's easier and easier to use. And it's also something, when you look at people and you say, well, they kind of come at this at the eighth grade level. Well, you know, in your chosen field, you're probably at a much higher level, but this is not something you want to become an expert at. You just want to use it. And so we need to make it as simple as we can. And I completely agree. In fact, what I'm trying to do is when I talk about this stuff, and if I don't do it, please tell me. It can be understood at the business level. You don't have to be a technical person to be able to tell whether or not we're doing this information technology stuff the right way. And we need to talk that way to people that are...
Right, and Mr. Chair, if I may respond, I think that is absolutely correct. There's nothing more frustrating to a guy like me who is fairly proficient at operating a computer at, you know, the basic levels. You get an email from someone, it's got an attachment, and I open up the attachment, and I've got to install this driver or whatever software off the internet to be able to read things. You know what? I dump it. I don't even look at it because I don't have time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so when you're designing an e-government solution, you've got to keep in mind that it's got to be user-friendly, and it cannot frustrate people, most of all, because they won't use it if they do.
Yeah. Chairman Morse, Representative, I think other ways that we can really drive people nuts with this technology is that the navigation doesn't work. And you got it. And it wasn't designed by a human being that ever had to use the thing. And people don't want to work very hard. It's not going to make you more productive if it's like some sort of mental challenge every time you try to interact with a platform. So I completely agree with you. And because I completely agree with you, it doesn't mean we always do this well. But we we understand we're supposed to do this. Okay, and. We need to put ourselves in the shoes of the people that have to interact with the thing and get some value out of it.
Thank you.
Okay. John, maybe if we could just think for just a minute on the balance of your presentation and the time limitations. We probably have about 40 minutes, 45 minutes.
I'll try to move it along.
So if we could, I'll trust your judgment to hit the points that you think are important. Okay.
On page 14, information security. I'm going to talk about that later, so I'll kind of skip this. Business continuity plan. This is a very, very interesting area, but I've got a better section to talk about than here, so let's move on. If it's okay with you, we'll just take a real quick look at these org charts here. I hope you don't want to go through these things in too much detail. The way that it's broken up is there's four major areas. If you look at the enterprise and governance services area, what's in there is the enterprise policy and planning section and the GIS or geospatial. Publishing distribution is the largest in terms of headcount. It's a big service organization. The enterprise application development area includes the general government data center, which will be consolidated as one of the first in the Scenic project. It contains the development and consulting group, which basically provides, Mr. Radford was in here the other day, it supports the legacy enterprise systems for the state, that kind of stuff. EGov is in there. And then lastly, under enterprise infrastructure services, is the enterprise network system, and that's where all the voice is, and that's quite a big operation for us, the data, backbone, and so forth.
Mr. Chair, quick question. Will you, Don, sometime during your presentation, will you be talking about the Burns data?
It's in here.
It's part of this. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. So,
part of the elimination strategy, part of the 10%.
Yeah. Let me move on to programs and services. Again, the voice area talked about is a pretty big area for us. Let me just give you a couple, three numbers to maybe help you out with that. It provides telephone service to 52,000 state employees. It processed 86.5 million phone calls in 2004. So these are big deals, and sometimes people don't realize how big a service organization IRMD is. So that's a pretty big area. Publishing and distribution, this is also a substantial organization, and it went through a few years ago a consolidation and centralization. So a lot of agency mail and print services were consolidated in the publishing and distribution organization. Now, I wouldn't really totally qualify, and this maybe is a fine point for you, we don't need to go into much detail on it, as a shared services, because it just sort of was just a raw consolidation. And the governance model, I think you could argue, isn't right for it. But it is something that we will probably move into more of a shared services model over time.
Mr. Chair? Just a quick question. In providing telephone service for 52,000 state employees, I didn't think we had 52,000. I thought the numbers that have been in front of us have been 36, 42, 47. So I'm just curious.
Sure.
Consistency in numbers is important to me.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cross, because I forgot to introduce myself earlier, Cora Parker from the Budget and Management Division for the record. I believe, and Mr. Truman can correct me, that some of the customers here are not only state employees, and which would also, I think, in this case, include many of the higher education customers, which increases that number from the lower FTE number you've heard. But I believe that there are also a few local government and other customers that buy okay. into some of these state services okay. that increase the number of pure raw customers. I think some ESDs and some...
Chairman Morris, Representative Carl. That's also true on the data side. We are servicing, in fact, probably shouldn't go there. We have discovered some users that we didn't know we had on some of these things. So we won't go to our future. We won't talk
about
that.
We'll talk about that later.
Okay. On page 22, the Systems Development Consulting Organization, I said before, is basically provides legacy support of legacy systems. Most of the systems that it works on and where it adds its most value are those systems that we would call enterprise systems, that are the ledger systems and payables and payroll systems for most or all of the state. And that's primarily a maintenance organization. We've got some work to do with that organization. It has a bias towards build. We're trying to move it to a bias towards buy and get out of the building and programming of systems, providing that makes sense from a business point of view. There is a group called Enterprise Planning and Policy that works for me that is heavily involved in the enterprise in the strategic IT planning, in managing governance and oversight over strategic IT investments. One of the areas that we're really weak, I think somebody asked a question on this the other day, is that we are not where we need to be with respect to enterprise level information, such as how much in total do you spend on information technology across the entire state, how many people work in the information technology area across the entire state, where do you spend your dollars in information technology across the entire state, how does that compare to other people, similar organizations, and so forth, both in terms of amount and distribution. There are 55,000 boxes connected to the network. Do you know who owns all of them? And do we even know if they're state boxes? So there are enterprise information gaps that we're working to fill, but before you even ask me the question, I'll tell you right now that's an area where we still need to do a lot of work. And if you're going to hold this job and try to assure the state that it is making wise investments in information technology and not spending more than it should or spending it in the wrong areas. You need that kind of enterprise information. We know that we've got a diversity and complexity in that installed base that we ought not to have, and we know that the complexity costs us money, and we don't want it unless we have to have it to address our business problems. So it shouldn't be just the way in which we've chosen to manage it or not manage it. It ought to be in there because of the complexity of the business we're trying to address. But in the interest, I didn't quite get there.
Yeah, thank you. How do you distribute your employees? I imagine you're in all of the buildings around, and where is your main office? Where do you hang out?
Chair Morris and Senator Morris said, I have a really charming office over in Daz East, and I have a train that goes by every 15 or 20 minutes. I have a beer truck that stands right outside my window for a view. So I have,
does that make you thirsty?
There are days when I wish I could take advantage of that. But, so I'm in Daz East. We also have personnel in the publishing and distribution out near the lottery building. Oh. So we have over 100 folks out there. So we're in several buildings, but my offices, my deputy's office, and some of the management leadership, most of it's sitting over in Daz East.
It is not what you would call Class A space.
No.
Functional,
if you want to cut that
I guess my question is, though, you have staff people in all, don't you have staff people in all of the state offices? You don't.
No, sir.
You don't. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Obviously, my reputation precedes me. I appreciate you doing the preemptive strike in terms of talking about we really don't know precisely how much we're spending across the entire state on these issues. And from a management standpoint, and I know Senator Morris has managed a very large company, I think it's important that information is gathered, because it's part of my fiduciary responsibility as an elected government official to assure that I'm monitoring how dollars are spent here. And when you're talking about such a large expenditure on an ongoing basis, It concerns me. And the area that concerns me the most is the largest agency, and that's the Department of Human Services, the largest budget, the largest number of employees. It concerns me that we elected officials do not necessarily have all of the information we need to approve or not approve of certain types of spending, and the accountability then on how those dollars are being spent, cost overruns. Again, I take this very seriously because I view this as part of my fiduciary responsibility to the people of Oregon. And so I really need that information at some point here. We need to collect that as a state. And I think most of us agree that that's a wise direction for us, just for the accountability of it all, if nothing else.
Chairman Morse, Representative Goff, you and I have met before and
yes.
talked about this. I could not agree with you more. It's not possible to tell if we're doing this right if you don't have any management information at the enterprise level. Now, what do we have? The Scenic Project has given us a current, accurate, complete inventory of the major computing assets of our 12 largest agencies, which means we've got more than 95% of the stuff. That's not that there's not a lot of other stuff out there, but if you want to talk about an 80-20 rule, that project alone has given us a lot of information. We are also going to be pulling into scope, because we're trying to make the scenic business case more aggressive and stronger, a lot of the land desktops associated with our 12 agencies, and the three largest agencies have already agreed to put those in. Well, that's thousands of boxes. So we are going to have a hell of a lot of information on our assets that will cover most of the investment, the significant stuff, but it will not be comprehensive. And the problem that you see right away is, how are you going to sustain that information and ensure to me over time? I mean, you have this nice one-time snapshot baseline, but how are you going to make sure that you've got a current, up-to-date database on this stuff, and that's what we need to go work on. But I couldn't agree with you more. It's an absolutely reasonable thing. But one of the problems I think we have is we've worked off a business model in the state that has been agency centric for a long time, and that's our tradition. And what we're recognizing today is that it's not that it shouldn't be primarily agency-centric, but there's a component to it or an element to it that's got to be enterprise. And there are some tremendous opportunities for us to do things more cost-effectively if we just don't replicate them over and over again at every single level. So we want to be able to have enterprise information. And so I totally agree with you. And I'll be happy to discuss this further with you about how to be more aggressive in this area, but it is not an overnight instantaneous thing to fix, because we got accounting systems that have a certain degree of resolution and granularity and so forth, and there's some things that we need to work on.
And Mr. Chair, my last question to Don is, and I do fully agree with that, this is an incredibly complex area, because all of these systems have some, not all of them, but some have great difficulty in talking with each other. And if you're going to consolidate these things, that is a monumental challenge. When do you think that you will have when do you think you could produce a comprehensive document that says, here's the breakdown of all the spending in an agency, and here's the total at the bottom? Any idea when we can finally get to that place?
Chairman Morris, Representative Krauf, I think it's going to be an iterative, ongoing process, but I would say that we should be able to tell you that we know pretty well about 95% of our investment, and you can guess the rest or forecast or project the rest in the next couple of years. I have to tell you, it's an area that I just me personally, to do this job, have to put constant pressure on. It's an area I think that the members of the CIO Council agree. We can't formulate enterprise strategy if we don't have any data. So everybody needs it for different reasons at different levels, and it is a management information gap that we have in the state that's a legacy from our model, but I think it needs a priority, and it needs a sense of urgency associated. The Scenic Project will give us a non-trivial step in that direction, but I would say not a fully satisfactory step in terms of providing all the management information, particularly on things that are strategic, emerging, direction setting, but small. Well, we may not be able to see those things as well as we need to see them. You want to see things, I think, earlier than when they become great, big, huge things. You want to know that this is something that's important. You want to watch this. And we don't have that kind of system at this point.
It'd be nice to know that information before a DMV computer circumstance surfaces again.
Okay.
We need to keep moving.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
For indulging me.
Let me see if I can do a little shortcut. I'm going to suggest that we move to page 25. That's all right.
Yes.
Okay. You've heard a lot about this problem. Maybe you've heard more than you ever want to hear. And if you don't need to hear anymore, just let me know and I'll move on. This data center network consolidation. There's some of the things about this I think you should understand that are very important, okay? One is that we have got the 12 largest agencies, the directors of those agencies, to own this thing at the business level. They are the ones that walked into the governor's office, not me, and they recommended to the governor that he approve moving to the next phase of a project that will take their data centers from their agencies, consolidate them into an enterprise data center to save money. They have put a tremendous amount of time in. And why that is important is because that's a model for us to deal with other enterprise. If we're going to be successful in doing enterprise strategies, if we're going to be able to install an enterprise component to our business model, we have to get these agency directors to own this from a business point of view. And what I think has happened is very good. It's been very positive. Very encouraging. They have been very supportive. And you talked about to speak English and don't talk in technical stuff. We have been able to interface with these folks on things like cybersecurity that a lot of people think is sort of a nerdy, techie subject, where they understand it and they understand the relevance of it to them, and they could take management action. The CIOs that report to them, okay, are now between a rock and a hard place. Me asking them for help and resources on enterprise projects, and their agency director saying, "What the hell are you doing, working on that when we've got problems within the agency?" So it gets us all on the same sheet of music, and the governance and oversight of the scenic project is an asset that is not only important to the success of that project, but other projects as well. Now, I cannot give you a number in anticipation of a question that may be coming here, but I will tell you this. In the late March, early April time frame, there will be a number. It will have been reviewed by these 12 agency directors, it will have been approved by them, and it will have been vetted by the governor, and it will be a hell of a lot better than anything you've heard of or seen so far. It will be a good, strong business case, and it will put us in a zone where we can say we did pretty well. We did as well as they do in the private sector here. So it's going to be a good result. It's going to be a non-trivial amount of money, but I also want to anticipate one other question. Okay, the cash flow on this project will not go positive until the next biennium. So we'll still be paying off the one-time costs in the 2005-2007 biennium to produce this consolidation. But from then on and for the foreseeable future, there will be a significant annual savings to the state. And then the next question is, well, where is that going to go? Well, that's another thing way above my pay grade that we can talk about in another meeting. But it is going to be a meaningful amount of money. Okay? And the governance of this project has been just excellent, and I've been well supported. The governor's been very active in it.
Christian,
yeah. When you say meaningful, Don, 1%, 2%, 5% of what we're currently spending, 10, 20. What are you describing here when you say meaningful?
Well, let me answer the question. I don't want to be too cute here, but let me answer the question this way, so I don't get myself into all kinds of difficulty. In the private sector, you wouldn't do a data center and network consolidation because it's not worth the battles and wars and politics and pain unless you could get about 20%. We're going to be in that zone. It's good. I mean, and I'll tell you why. It's obvious. If you look at our three largest data centers, you add them all together, you have 60% of one medium data center. You take the next nine, you add them all together, you get 16%. What does that say? This stuff is teeny. It's small. It's inefficient. It's obvious there's going to be a savings in a business case. What we've been struggling with is just calculating the thing and getting everybody to agree to the thing. It's clear. And there's one other really important benefit of this project, and I'm not going to talk to you about it in detail, but it substantially gets at the risk exposure that the current computing and networking infrastructure has, which is unacceptable.
Thank you, Chair. On that potential 20% savings, I'm still missing a little link here. How and when, and maybe you said we don't know, but when are we going to know what that dollar amount is?
Yes. The business case should be finalized and should have been approved by the Scenic Governing Board, reviewed and approved by the governor in the late March, early April time frame of this year.
Questions?
I do, but unrelated to that. And
okay. One quick question.
Yes, sir.
Not to belabor it, but when you think about what you've created, this model here, do you have within it the potential to reach out and pick up, say, for example, K through 12?
Chair Morse, I'm not prepared to say that this model, unchanged, will be all we need to go after all of our enterprise initiatives. I'll give you an example. Geospatial. It is not going to be adequate to have only the 12 state agency directors oversee an enterprise project there. We're going to have to deal with the municipalities. We're going to have to deal with the counties. We're going to have to deal with a hell of a lot more than 12 state agencies, and we're going to have to deal with the federal government. So that makes the governance problem that we've solved in Scenic look like a third-grade homework problem compared to what we've got to solve over here. But what is encouraging about it is we solved a problem in Scenic that nobody thought we could solve either. And it's worked really well, and the agency directors have worked as a team exceedingly well and have been able to take an enterprise perspective and not... We want to take an agency perspective, by the way. We want to make sure they protect their agency interests, but they've been able to take an enterprise perspective. I think that we need... We're just starting this journey on enterprise initiatives, and so I don't think... I'm certainly not prepared to say I fully understand in state government what the right governance model is going to be as we move further and further, but I think we have a good start, and I think we've shown we can do these things.
Question. Thank you, Chair. Can you send me just a list of the 12 agencies that are participating?
It's actually in the presentation.
Page 25.
No, I'm on 27. All right.
That's my point.
Can I follow up question? Thank you. Is there a reason economic and community development are not on that list?
Chairman Morris, Representative Smith, the agencies that we identified were the ones that we felt could, that had the largest computing infrastructure investment that could produce the maximum business case in the shortest period of time for the state of Oregon. And that process was based on what we thought was true before we had the detailed inventories, and it may be that there could have been some changes there. And if you look at, if we were to sit down with you and give you a more detailed review, you would see that the strategy for doing the consolidation is also to start with the three largest agencies first. We will produce 95% of the business case within the first 90 to 120 days of the project. Okay.
Chair?
One quick question, Don. I mean, this is a direction I thought we've long needed to go in, and I think it's appropriate. When you're talking about ballparking 20% savings, either way, and I'm not going to hold you to that, and I'm just trying to get a sense of what we're shooting for.
Yes, sir.
Because no one's articulated that before in any meeting that I've been in. Perhaps it has with you, Senator. But is that 20% of just general fund, or would it be 20% of a total expenditure, other funds, federal funds, that we're spending, which is a lot of money?
Chairman Morris, Representative Crown. One of the really interesting and exciting challenges in doing a data center and network consolidation project is called the color of money. Okay, it's not just general fund. And so how in the world are you going to capture the savings, allocate the costs, when everybody's kind of coming from a different place? Now, having said that, this problem has been solved over and over and over again. It is soluble. And we have a consultant engaged already who is working exactly on the problem. But the answer is, it is a business case that's calculated on savings that span the color of money, sort of indifferent to the color of money. What it says is, how much money, wherever the hell you got it from, are you spending to do the stuff that's in scope, and how much are you going to be spending after we've done this thing? Okay, and the difference between those two numbers is the savings, and the amount of money we spent to get from A to B is the one-time cost that we got to pay back, and that's the business case. Okay, pretty basic stuff.
And we'll have that detail.
Yes.
Yes. End of March, April.
Yes, Chairman.
Further detail.
Yes.
I mean, we have seen these numbers before.
This is an
evolving project.
Yeah. Not only that, but this is just an industry perspective on what a good competitive business case would be. Let me suggest we move to page 30. Information security is something that we've been talking about, the eGov platform, right? eGov platform can't work unless it talks to the Internet. As soon as it talks to the Internet, you've just connected yourself to every hacker in the world. So everybody knows, I think, in this room, that one of the things we have to pay attention to today and for the foreseeable future, and probably expend more resource on than we'd rather do, is cybersecurity. Okay? there are bad guys out there that want to do things we can't let them do. All right, but this program also understands one other thing. It understands that a lot of the reasons why bad guys can get into our network is because of bad network design, bad network management, and so forth. So, to the extent possible, we're going to invest in improving our cybersecurity and end up with a better and more cost-effective computing and networking infrastructure in the process. But we do have a significant issue right now that several members of the legislature have been briefed on, and we are moving very aggressively right now to build an effective cybersecurity program. It will probably take us a couple of years to get to the point where we want to get, but we are moving very quickly, and we have a triage process that basically says, tell me the four or five things that I can do in the shortest possible time that will produce the absolute maximum reduction in risk exposure for the state, and that's what we're doing.
I think it'd be helpful to comment briefly on the appropriation that was made from the emergency board, and that being the down payment and additional funds required appropriated in this biennium to address the very issues that Don's.
Chairman Morse, members of the committee, we were able to get the 12 agency directors to sign a letter, which we presented to the JLCIMT, strongly supporting a request for COP funding in the amount of $8.6 million. We briefed several members of the JLCIMT on the need for this investment. They supported the recommendation to the e-board. And we're in the process of executing that first phase. Now, as Senator Morse points out, that's the first phase. That is the immediate response to what we know. Not, well, I guess what I didn't tell you is, by the way, we did a comprehensive vulnerability assessment. So all of this money, this investment, these plans are based on facts that we gathered in a study that told us where we had problems, holes, and vulnerabilities that were unacceptable. Okay, and we are able, by the way, to review that, I think, with members of the legislature and with the agency directors in a non-technical way so they can understand why these things were not okay. And that in order to get to a point where we have a program which will reduce our risk exposure to acceptable level, we're going to be back in the 05-07 biennium with a request for additional funding. We already have mentioned that I think it's of the order of $14 million, and we've already kind of delineated what's in that request. It's something I would rather review in a different kind of a format, but I'd be happy to spend, we'd be happy to spend time with any of you, all of you, at any time you'd like to know more about this.
Mr. Chair, I would like to have you come sit down with me sometime soon and share with me precisely what the circumstances have been and how you arrived at your risk vulnerability assessment. I'd like to understand a little bit. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is it appropriate for me to move in a different direction with a different question?
Certainly. My perspective, yeah.
I'd like to ask a question about e-commerce. What are the possibilities of having the Employment Department, Economic and Community Development, our Small Business Development Centers, Business and Consumer Services linked together and to create an entrepreneurial page for people who are looking at coming to the state of Oregon or doing business in the state of Oregon? Don't have to go to 18 different places, but can come to one place and literally go through a checklist or an opportunity list, if you will, of how the state of Oregon can help you or support your idea if you're a small business owner.
Chairman Morse represents this. Let me answer it this way. We are looking for encouraging people to come forward with ideas just like that. For exploiting this program, we are putting into place a first round of applications. Here's what we're trying to put. We're trying to put applications out there that particularly are outward facing to citizens of the state that make it unnecessary for them to understand how we're organized, so that if they know what it is they want to do, okay, that they can talk to this system in plain English and do it. and they can do it from their house at 3 o'clock in the morning or whenever they feel like it. Now, that's just one of these applications that we're particularly focusing in on now are those that span multiple agencies.
Let me ask a question, if I may. And I know there's multiple applications. Unfortunately, I only have a little umbrella in this budget, and mine is job creation. Would you be willing to spend some time with me? And I'm going to bring those directors together.
Yes.
And I want to explore figuring out how to create a very user-friendly entrepreneurial page.
Jeremy Morse, Representative Smith, I would love to do that. Absolutely love to do that.
Afterwards, will you give me a card?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, with risk of continuing the topic further, but you and I will be seeing each other in the Economic Development Transportation Committee as well. I would just stem off of what Don had said and indicate that from a technical standpoint, I think that's a very doable thing. And what you have focused on, again, is that really what needs to happen is the interaction with the business side of the process, I guess, with the different division or agencies and their directors.
And I know time's of the essence here. But I've been onto each of these departments' web pages, and they're nice web pages, but they're not linked. And you know, if you take a first-time entrepreneur who's afraid of hiring their first employee because they don't understand payroll, and workers' comp is in one area, state income tax is in another, then you have to go somewhere else to figure out federal. Then you're worrying about other issues, all of which are separate places. We need to have that centralized so that entrepreneur can figure out how to hire that first employee. You want to stimulate the economy of the state of Oregon, help mom and pop figure out how to hire number one. Once they figure out how to hire number one employee, number two, three, four, and five will follow.
Great suggestion.
Chair Morse, Representative Smith. The other thing I just want to mention very quickly is what you're looking at when you look at our eGov program right now is you're looking at something that's in process. We're still in the process of converting content. So we have about, I think, 47-45% of the agency content has been converted. So there's still quite a bit of agency content to be converted. And there's also a process of some of the agencies, as they look at their content, realize they don't want to convert all of it, that some of it died many years ago or hasn't been updated and so forth. So I think you're going to see some things that everybody realizes we've got to fix and change because we're in the process of moving to the new eGov platform. But it's already quite active and is doing a lot of business. But I would love to meet with you and work with you.
Yeah, activate that a little further.
Good, very good. We've got
how much?
About 7 minutes.
7 minutes. All right. Just like to mention briefly a little bit about business continuity planning. And so you can see I'm talking a lot about risk exposure in this talk. When you build a data center and you consolidate our 12 largest agencies into it, what you just did was create an enormous single point of failure. You just created an enormous risk for the state. And so you have to do offsetting things to mitigate those risks. You have to have an extremely robust disruption recovery plan. You need to pay attention to things like business continuity planning seriously. So we do have an enterprise program to deal with business continuity planning. And what I mean by enterprise is we're worried about those business processes, those critical business processes that are interlinked across agencies. Okay. In other words, the enterprise business continuity planning project is not just the roll-up of all the individual business continuity plans that individual agencies would deem appropriate for creating. And if you think about it, If you are an agency and you have an important process and you have any dependence on information technology, my organization is going to be referenced in your business continuity plan. And so what we really are talking about here is a network of plans. And how do you update a network of plans and so on? So that's the enterprise problem we're trying to solve, okay, as well as promote, stimulate, and support the individual activities of agencies to build business continuity plans as they see fit to deal with other processes. So we may come a process that you may in your agency decide is ranked number 10, but we have six agencies whose number one process fails. If you fail, it's now all of a sudden a number one process. See what I'm saying? So it's a more complex, subtle thing, but that's the enterprise BCP program that we're worried about and working on right now. Okay, performance measures. I have talked to you. I will cover those performance measures, but very quickly, because I don't consider them to be that useful right now. And what I've talked to you about are the ones that we're really putting a lot of pressure on, which tell us how can we tell whether or not we're doing a good job running the division in terms of the efficiency of the stuff we're doing, the quality of the stuff we're doing, okay? And those are all the outward-facing customer metrics, and then behind those are additional metrics which represent the dials and knobs that we have to turn in order to produce the results that we're looking for the customer. So if you talked about the help desk, for example, just give you an example, this is one of our best organizations right now in terms of metrics, okay? What he does is capture all the problems or all of the calls that come into IRMD, come into that organization. Now, its goal is to resolve 80% of those calls at level one so they never rattle down into the rest of the organization. That's a world-class result. They're currently, having been in business for about a year, doing 62%. We think that's a really good result, having just come into existence, and in that short of time, being close to world-class. Their abandoned call rate goal is less than 4%. They're actually achieving 3%. Their wait time goal is 30 seconds. They're actually achieving. That's how long it takes you to wait. And if you've ever worked with a Dell customer service or things like that, you know, it's a little bit longer sometimes. They're now achieving 8%. Now, I'm not going to take you through this whole list, but I want you to know that not only do we have this metrics program, but we actually manage the help desk according to what these things tell us. And that's where you get the benefit of having a metrics program. Not just so you can say you have one, but you actually run the place and decide whether or not it needs to be improved or there are opportunities to improve by looking at your metrics program. Okay, very quickly, if we go to the page 35, the percent of state information technology projects with a 90% actual to expectation ratio is measured by performance, et cetera, et cetera. Target 75%, 2003, actual was 80%. Target 85% in 2004, actual 65%. Looks like we're going downhill in that. Let me tell you where this comes from. This is why I'm saying it's not that useful to me. This comes from, I'm on page 35.
And could you repeat the numbers again?
Oh, that was an error, the 37.5. I meant to add that to my comments. The actual number is 80.
80.
Okay. Sorry, I apologize. I don't want to confuse you.
Well, I was going to give you the benefit of the doubt since you only arrived at the agency in late 03.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And what's the 04 number?
The 04 number is target was 85, the actual 65.
Okay,
now, 65 I want you to know what this stuff is so that you don't know why I don't think this is so hot. Okay. This is based on a subjective survey by an individual of a subset of projects. A subjective survey, okay, by an individual on a subset of projects. What this means, you have about as good an idea as I have. So I hate to waste your time with this, but this was sort of a metric that we were supposed to talk about. I'm not using this too much. Okay. In fact, what I'm really focused in on is the very largest investments we've got, things that are $500,000 and up. Because if we're not doing those things well, then we've got a real problem.
I am curious, and I don't know that you would be prepared to answer this today. What you just said about the invalidity and unreliability of these types of polls, we're hearing from a lot of folks that are talking to us about performance measures, and it just makes me wonder why you're presenting us with information that is not reliable, and where the burden lies in making sure that we get information that's reliable, or why are we even spending our time talking about it? Where do you think the burden lies with providing reliable performance measures, with you or with us?
Chairman Morris, Representative Beckin, it's absolutely is on me to provide and explain why they're reliable, explain what they mean, explain what I think you should conclude is true about whatever it is we're talking about from looking at the metric. When you come into something, you have stuff that's already there, and then you have stuff that's new. This is some stuff that was already there. I don't want you to think it's something that it isn't. I would suggest we not spend a whole lot of time on this section because this is not what I'm focused on right now. It's not the way I'm telling if we're doing a good job right now, but it is a set of performance measures that, how would you say it?
They've been adopted and reviewed in prior.
Don, let's move to prioritization. Okay. You would.
Thank you. Okay. Let me suggest, if you can go to page 41, please. I want to say something before we go into this section because Cora said it before in terms of these cuts and whether or not these cuts are of any are particularly useful to you in terms of the exercise you're trying to pursue. I want you to know a couple things. IRMD, over the last 18 months, has been cut four times substantially by me. We had several problems in the organization, and what I'm trying to say is we've gotten to the point now where there's not buckets of slack and slop and stuff like that laying around in the organization. And when you come and you say, I want you to talk to me about 10% cuts, what I really have for options is the elimination of a service. I don't have the option to say, well, I will tighten our belt in this area, or tighten our belt, because we already did all the belt tightening. Now, I realize it's a statement, and you may want to get involved in confirming that, but so that you understand some of these cuts, because you'll look at it and say, well, you can't do that, okay? Or you can't shut this down. And why are you recommending? You just talked to JLCIMT about improving quality assurance, and you got a cut in here that says cut the quality assurance program. The way I arrived at some of these not-so-great ideas is what is our current dependency on this stuff? And if we have a high level of current dependency, I try to avoid cutting. If it was a great idea and we need to absolutely do it, but we don't have a high degree of dependency on it, I put it on the piece of paper. Okay? So, page 43, there's the quality assurance program.
Mr. Chair. Yes. Just briefly, two positions, $800,000, how much you paying these people?
Well,
I'm serious. That's a lot of money for two people, for a biennium.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kropp, I think that represents the entire cost of the program. So it includes not only the salary for two people across the biennium and the OPE, which includes PERS rates, Social Security, health care, et cetera, attached to those positions, but also the cost of services and supplies that are attached to that position. And with respect to QA, I think that may even include a small piece of consulting costs as well.
Yeah. Sort of like that bus you were talking about a little bit.
Or like that, yeah.
Okay. Page 44. There's a component of the systems development consulting organization, which is very small, that deals with some small agency support. We do the best we can to try to provide some support, either in terms of direction consulting or actual work, to some of the smaller agencies, which cannot afford to staff on a regular basis resources to address application development issues, and or help them engage people that can build systems for them or manage them. And so what this represents is a cut of that service. The second one after that is really a tough cut, which is geospatial. And the reason for it, again, I just want to repeat the logic, is the current dependency. Where we are right now with geospatial is we have completed the coordination part of it. We understand how to build a geospatial system for the state, but in terms of what is in place in terms of data, and capabilities, okay, that's the next phase. Okay, so our capabilities are somewhat limited, but we've done all the governance, the standard writing, and the technology strategies all ready to go. All of those were that effort necessary prerequisite to being actually able to deploy a GIS system. But current dependency, not as critical as it would be. And so that's why it's on the list. I think it's a terrible idea to cut it, but again, you know, that's on how things are going. And then finally, a limited systems development and consulting open systems group. Now, this is not the group that does the legacy systems support for the enterprise systems. This is the group that builds what I would call the kind of the decision support systems to assist in augment management decision making, this cut would not affect the support of the legacy system. And then the Burns Archive Center, which was discussed earlier, to cut that, and then leave it to the agencies to address their own backup and archival services. We believe that there is a viable role for the Burns Archive Center, but in terms of current dependency on it. And then the last
Chair,
one.
If I may ask a quick question, what is the current utilization of the Burns Archive Center by state agencies? Percentage of state agencies that are actually backing up their information or not?
Yeah, Chair Morris, Representative Crum. As you probably know, the Burns Archive Center is sort of sawed in half, and you have the lottery. Is working with is using the center extensively, and then we have other agencies. I don't have the statistics with me, but there is in terms of number of agencies and amount of work that's being done, but it's non-trivial, and it's not something you could just not. You would have to address the removal of it. Okay, there's enough dependency on that. And then I think this last cut on page 46 falls into the category that Cora described as making absolutely no sense at all, which is to eliminate the technical support for the DAS, LAN, and desktop services. So this is not just a shift of cost to some other agency. This is a shift of cost within an agency. Somebody would have to do something about the LANs and desktops. So I don't consider this to be a terribly useful cut. And I want to say to you that I'm not submitting this list to try to not cooperate with the process, but I want to reemphasize that we've cut this organization four times in this biennium, and the only alternatives I have, honestly, would be to cut services. And that may be what's necessary.
In light of your review of these reductions in your organizational chart, maybe you could clarify. You have two charts. They're both listed as 0507.
Yes.
And you have, in the second one, a reduction of about 12 FTEs. Which one is actual today, and yeah. Which one is...
Yes.
Are you proposing
nope.
in a reduction of 12 FTEs? Could you elaborate on that?
Yes, Chairman Morris. There is a mistake, a mistitle on the first chart. That is an 0305. Chart, and the second chart is 0507, and there are cuts that are proposed in the 0507.
Now, would those cuts be reflected in your reduction model or before your reduction model?
This is before. Before.
It's before. So
yes, the additional cuts beyond that.
So what you're saying is in this proposed chart, that would carry you forward with kind of a maintenance before making any cuts, as we just reviewed.
Chairman Morse, yes, that is a freeze the current organization, carry it after these four rounds of cuts, carry it in through the next biennium versus the additional cuts, the 10% cuts, which are not reflected on the chart.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, two quick questions. One, which I'd like to have you respond to me later in writing, perhaps the entire committee. The first is, if this committee or the legislature as a whole decided to say to every agency, you have 5% less to spend on IT, what would be the practical effect of that? That's the first part of that question. The second part of the question is how much money would that save us? Okay. I'm talking general fund money now. All right.
Okay.
I'm not talking other fees or federal. Right. I know that's a very simple question to an incredibly complex answer, but it is one that is being asked, and we need to have an answer to that. Secondly, the question I'd like to have you answer for me now, and maybe Lori can help address this, is since I've been here and going on my seventh year now, I think you are the fourth person in your position. Okay? Now, when you have that high a turnover in a chief information officer, it tells me there's a problem. And I'd like to know why people don't stay in your job for very long. Now, either we're asking way too much of you and it's extremely stressful, or it's such a big mess that people throw up their hands in disgust and walk away.
Chair Morris, Representative Croft, that actually is a really good question. I can't really speak to other people who preceded me and the decisions they made, and I didn't know them, and I'm not that familiar with their capabilities, but I can tell you what my view is. Right? I came to the state of Oregon because after extensive conversations with Gary Weeks and some other people, there appeared to me to be several things that I had a lot of experience doing in other places that I could do to help the state of Oregon. And the thing that I find rewarding about work is getting things done. Now, if you want me to go, then just bottleneck me up and drive me crazy with a lot of bureaucracy and not let me get anything done ever, and then I probably would go because that's the reward I get out of work. Now, I will say to you that there has been politics, bureaucracy, game playing, all that kind of stuff, but there has been every other place that I've ever worked, and I have had wonderful support from my boss, and I'd say whether she was here or not, and very good access to the governor, and I have been extremely pleased with more than anything, the agency directors and the willingness of them to work with me. So I think I have an easier job than some of the people that were here before me. I mean, in kind of a perverse way, having a $1 billion budget problem does get people's attention about the need to change. And it does sort of take the discretionary element out of paying attention to this stuff. So I may have a lot easier job than my predecessors. But our real challenge here is we have to prioritize. Because as you could tell from this presentation, there's a hell of a lot of things that need to get done. And what's important is that we agree on what the order and priority is, so that I'm not working on stuff that people think is not unimportant, and we recognize the fact that some of these things cannot be done overnight. Now, I'm a very impatient person, okay, and I think you are too, and I don't like to take an awful long time to do this stuff. So I think where you can help me and us is let's knock down as many of the barriers as we can so we can get this stuff done, because there's no reason why we can't do this better than we're doing it.
Thank you, Donald.
I think Representative Prupt asked a very good question, and I have to tell you, I truly, truly appreciate your approach today. The question I'd ask you is what would be the industry wage standard for a chief information officer of a 44,000 person company? Is it comparable to what a chief financial information officer in the state of Oregon makes?
Jeremy Morris, Representative Smith. Let me put it this way. No, you're not compensating at private sector levels, all right? But on the other hand, I don't think you have to compensate at private sector levels to attract good talent. You get what you pay for. I mean, I would rather have fewer better than lots of, not so good people. So I think that's a false economy there. But I think this is probably not in my best interest, but I don't think compensation level is the issue here in terms of attracting talent. I, I think what we need to worry about, if I was going to pick one single problem, I think you need to do a hell of a lot better job at identifying, developing, and preparing people for leadership positions in state. Okay? Because I haven't found a whole lot of problems with the talent that works for me, but I have found a lot of problems with the way we led it. And so if I were to go after one single human resource issue, it would be worry a lot about leadership and how you get it ready to do the jobs we need people to do.
This is a follow-up.
I think we'll just one last one, and then we'll move on to...
Well, it's irrelevant. But I just see this position as truly a springboard of opportunity for someone to go elsewhere. I mean, to serve as a chief information officer for the state of Oregon, you're putting a big human resource bullseye on you in terms of someone trying to recruit that position. So,
thank you, Don. Well, I'm sure
I
look forward to future discussions.
Computer problems.
Right.
Yeah. It is kind of a millstone around here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to respond to your question about the turnover a little bit, I think that folks have had frustration in terms of moving agenda, either resource or commitment to change. And there's been turnover there. Some of it was just purely personal reasons people moved on, but that has been a significant challenge. And so there's a window of opportunity here, I think, that Don's reflecting, where change, people are more interested in making those strategic changes that take a lot of pain and coordination and support, people continuing to support it to make it happen. So I thought, to sum this up, after you've been through all of the divisions and the cut lists and the prioritizations that we've talked for just a minute here, I think Dallas handed out a one-page sheet to you.
Yes, you have it.
I'm going to speak to. I kind of wanted to go back and sum up these 10% reductions. You know, the total DAS budget that was subject to the 10% reduction is about $200 million. So that means we're looking at a $20 million cut to get to that 10%. And there's sort of two ways to look at it. The way you've currently been through, where each of the divisions have proposed cuts, and some of them you found unacceptable and had frustration with, as we did. The other way is to look at it how the governor's recommended budget is put together, where the governor looked at cuts and that we had submitted an agency request and decided for the most part not to take those not to make those reductions, but to look at our policy option packages that are business changes to the infrastructure and methods to reduce the overall cost of government. So we haven't had the opportunity really to talk about those. So the 10% cuts that you've seen have been incremental, and for the most part those reductions result in cost shifts and a reduction to our capacity to manage and lead across agency efforts. So if you look at the prioritization of those cuts, you know, DAS provides infrastructure that's used by all of state government. So it's hard to say that the accounting functions that were in the state controller's division are more important or less important than the personnel services that were in the human resource division. So the priorities you saw were within their own program areas, not across those functions, because if you're running a business, the business wouldn't eliminate their human resource services division or their accounting functions and those types of things. They would keep portions of all of those in order to keep the business running. So that's sort of where DAS is sitting. If you look at the 0507 governor's recommended budget for DAS, it includes the business initiatives and the policy option packages that will reduce the cost of government. Now, we need legislative approval from you to move those forward. And on the back page of here, I'm going to talk just briefly about these four initiatives that you will see in phase two, so you have some sense of where we're going here. When David Hartwood was here talking about the State Services Division, he briefly mentioned the Oregon Smart Buy program. That leverages our state purchasing power to get better value for supplies and equipment purchases we make. This biennium, the estimated savings from that program is $9.3 million, and a similar amount will most likely be saved by the local governments and other entities that are purchasing off of those contracts. Now, we can't claim that, but they will have the benefit of those dollar savings. In 0507, if we go to the second phase of that project on Smart Buy, we estimate there'll be an additional $14 million of state agency savings, and the subdivisions that were serving the political local level would have other experience savings in that area also. If you move to what Don was talking about in the scenic project, computing and network, the original business case that was produced in July of 2003 and we spoke to the governor about identified $5 million per year in savings after a three-year transition payback period. So there's dollars to be saved there, but it does take legislative support to move that forward in terms of the consolidation. And as you know, that's not easy to do with 12 agencies, and there will be other items that will come after that related to the benefits of having consolidated the data center that the state potentially can save money on downstream. The next item on here is motor fleet financing, and David Hartwig spoke a little bit about that under State Services Division when he was here. There's a policy package that we're going to ask you to approve for COP financing to purchase new vehicles, and it increases our federal financial participation, meaning it reduces the state's cost if we move in that direction, and we would save an estimated $10 million in costs that are now currently billed out in fees to state agencies if we move in that direction. And then the last item on here is a consolidation of state agency fleets. We currently have a number of state agencies that are operating fleets without statutory authority to do so, and we would be consolidating those into the DAS fleet system, standardizing and using economies of scale, and there would be some cost reduction there. But again, we need your approval to do that. So there's an alternative in the DAS budget to making the kind of 10% cuts by division if we move to taking some strategic business initiative changes to the infrastructure and resulting in the same production of alternate savings for state government. So I would leave you with that thought in terms of when we move into the phase two discussion, those choices will be before you about how we want to move forward. I don't know if that's helpful, but
well, that is very helpful. Okay. Any questions or comments?
Any federal dollars for the fleet, is that just without strings, or is that a
matching fund? Or
it's the way the formulas are. It's the way the feds allow costs to be charged back to them, so it's the A87 issues. I don't know if you've followed that. Dallas may want to, looks like he wants to speak here.
Quite often, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we end up writing a check back to the federal government because in our fleet rates, we build in an amount to replace the vehicle. Feds won't allow that, so we have to write them a check to reimburse them for too much money that was charged. What the federal government will allow, however, is if you borrow money to buy the vehicles, the debt service in the rate. So, you can borrow the money, okay, repay it, and the feds will pay for that. But they will not allow you to build in a rate to go in cash buy the vehicle. So we've been writing checks to the federal government, just about everybody, any amount of fleet. And that's why Lori says, and Ms. Warner says, that we've been subsidizing the federal government because state agencies then have had to pay a higher amount to replace the vehicles. This is just a way of...
This, colleagues, will take a great deal of selling to the public to understand this issue, because as I was driving in this morning, there was a brand new Prius hybrid, you know, and what I understand is those hybrids are not generating a great deal of efficiencies, but when you're down $1 billion and you see brand new vehicles running on the highway and they have the DAS, we ought to take the DAS logo off. That's what we ought to do.
You know, Mr. Chair, I share that same sentiment. I don't know. It's got an E-plate on it, so I'm not sure why we need to have the bumper sticker, but that's something we're talking about.
But when people see, when we're in such a deficit and they see these new vehicles, it just boils of cynicism. And but this, you know, if this makes sense, it actually puts money in our pocket.
And of course, if you really got down to the cost-benefit discussion, you would, you know, if you keep the old vehicles, it's costing you more in the maintenance costs and that type of stuff than the new ones. But I understand the perception question you're raising in terms of...
Yeah, and it really goes down to a business model thought process, because as a farmer, if I didn't have a good year, I couldn't go to the bank and ask for a loan to buy a new piece of equipment or even any piece of equipment. And if I had a really bad year, I couldn't fix things that even broke necessarily unless it was absolutely essential. Because sometimes you have to make those choices in very difficult times. The problem becomes is that if you do that too many years in a row, your infrastructure degrades so deeply that your acquisition costs or your repair costs are prohibitive and out of sight. And that's that fine line and that balance we as managers, in essence, of the taxpayers' resource have to try to make a judgment on. And this is not easy.
Mm-hmm. And, Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I think that's what David Hartwig was pointing out to you. Over 40% of the fleet right now is past the standards that we would normally change them out on, because we have purchased fewer ones. But again, and we are in terms of working with the federal government standards, moving a certain percentage of the fleet to the alternative fuels and alternative vehicles as part of those cooperative agreements. So you'll see some of those on the road.
Well, I appreciate your kind of summary. I think that's helpful. One question I have, and this may be more appropriately directed to the co-chairs, because I know they wanted to kind of the big requests to have an opportunity to review these. But I have never seen an organizational chart that starts with a governor with a line of authority that has, and the ultimate authority is who can hire and fire. That starts with the governor, mm-hmm. and goes through to all of the. I'm not interested below the agency.
But I just want to know which ones he has authority to hire and fire.
Right. And
they can do that.
And looking at that and make the chart with a direct line with a hire and fire authority and a dotted line to the indirect, and they're hired and fired by commission.
Right.
Rather than by the governor.
We can do that.
Can you do that for
sure.
us?
Uh-huh.
Okay. It's not a huge request, but it's one that I've never seen. And when we're looking at this broad picture of organization and governance, sure. it would be very helpful, I think, to see how that all fits together. And then how these agencies relate to you mm-hmm. as the director of DAS mm-hmm. In terms of lines of authority.
Mm-hmm.
Do any of you share that same interest?
Yes.
No, we all know the answer, Senator.
Pardon?
No.
No, you know the answer.
well, it's just you.
No.
It's a really good question. In Oregon, you know, we have a little bit of a different kind of a system in the way our government is set up.
We're highly commission-driven.
Well, we're highly commission-driven, and I think a lot of the commissions do then report to the governor, but some of them are run by other elected officials, and even though they're in the executive branch, they don't report to the governor. So I think it's a great... Yeah.
If you could do that, and then if you judge that it's worthwhile, Dallas, should look at the other all the ways and means.
That's all I had commented on.
Okay. Well, we need to talk
Monday.
About agenda.
For Monday. We will meet at the Department of Revenue, which is right across the street from ODOT there. It will be downstairs in the atrium. We'll have the forms for you to sign. There will be someone there to witness. You don't need to bring anything. So that's Monday. Also, I just want to briefly go back to the performance measure.
Down the same time as our normal.
Same time, 8:30. Okay. And I'm also going to remind your staff, in case they see you loitering around your office at 8:30 on Monday morning, where you should be at the Department of Revenue. The next thing is, on the performance measure, part of phase two will be also, this is an iterative process, to review and make recommendations to maybe they need to change and come back, not at the table, but as part of the budget process. We will report out on the performance measures and point out those areas that you may want the agency to do a lot more work on. And then the process is then that they have to come back during the interim to the audit committee. For acceptance of those. So you've heard some performance measures by the agency people themselves saying these aren't worth the powder to blow in the blazes. So we have another, it doesn't die here, that we get input in phase two, and that we, as we move budgets out, then direction for them to work on.
So Our next meeting is Monday, 8:30 at the
Department of Revenue.
I also have a very important question. May I?
Hearing's closed.
Yes, who provides the...